Hi everyone, and welcome to the special Meet the Board series featured once a month on Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast. Each week on Wednesdays, Managed Healthcare Executive features C-Suite healthcare professionals whom we speak with about the most important issues in healthcare. In our Meet the Board series, we spotlight a member of MHE's editorial advisory board so our listeners know more about our board members and their roles in healthcare. The Meet the Board series is broadcasted at the end of every month. So be sure when you tune in to listen in and learn a lot. Hi, everyone. My name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm an associate editor with Managed Healthcare Executive. In this episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, senior editor of MHE, Peter Werwine, and I spoke with president and CEO of Care Oregon, Eric Hunter, for another episode of the Meet the Board podcast series. Hunter, who has been on MHE's editorial advisory board for over a year now, shared how his career in healthcare kickstarted, what managed care has become over time, how Medicaid is organized in Oregon, and more.
All right. So, Eric, first off, can you just give us a brief cliff note on how your career led you to your role as CEO of Care Oregon today? And are you able to share just a bit about Care Oregon and what they do as an organization?
Sure. A brief cliff note is I had no intention of being in this business necessarily. Went to college in Oklahoma, ended up working in the governor's office. Governor who was transitioning the healthcare system to Medicaid managed care. Although I had no experience in it at all, I went to work in that agency with him from my board and committee experience working with government and how it works. Got hired off by a company to start off a new Medicaid managed care plan in Maryland in 96 with Schaller Anderson. And that's how I got involved in Medicaid managed care at all. Did 10 years of various plans across the country with Schaller Anderson, did a stint at Centene, a few years of value options for health in Illinois and in Texas, then went to work for Boston Medical Center Health Net Plan, where we did Medicaid, Medicare, we're on the exchange, multiple states, and all of that culminated to an opportunity at Care Oregon, which I saw as sort of the pinnacle and culmination of all those bits and pieces, right? So the government work, the Medicaid work, the Medicare work, understanding community-based, understanding provider-based systems, working directly with a board of directors that provided strategic conversations, not-for-profit, which was an advantage that I felt the company had. And it was just an opportunity that couldn't be missed. The Oregon experience is one that is looking for innovation and creative ways to go beyond traditional, let's underwrite Medicaid managed care and just bid it to the lowest common denominator. And let's be proactive. Let's think about how to change the cost curve long term. And I could not pass this opportunity up.
That's great to hear. I actually wanted to change course a little bit with this question, but I wanted to get your thoughts on, being a new board member with Managed Healthcare Executive. And just kind of ask, what you think of the publication or what you think of our brand.
Yeah, I think it's a great brand and a strong publication. I've been reading for a while and learned quite a bit. I think the idea of bringing folks together to express often divergent opinions on not only sort of techniques of doing things, but the rationale. Digging deeper into the conversation than just simply, hey, I'll make my sales pitch and put an argument in an article out there that makes the case why you should buy my product. Here's the thought process behind, what goes into creating a system or a product or a way of managing the business. And I think that that's one of the things that I think serves me best from my history is that working at Schaller Anderson in, as I said, must have been 10 states and Centene in 2 states, value options in 2 states and multiple states in Boston and New Hampshire with that plan is the system only works if people are open to other ideas, to really digging deeper into other ways of doing things, because as confident as we all have to be in this business at a certain level, if you believe that your way is the only way that works, your team will fail. And so I think this publication is strong in bringing ideas to folks that will really let us moderate our positions and understand ways to move the needle so that it really is impactful and we don't get sort of locked into our myopic view of this is the only way to do things. So I think it's an amazing publication.
Thank you, Eric. So I believe that in Oregon, Medicaid is sort of organized a little differently or maybe more closely managed by managed care plans. There's a state agency and there's a different name for Medicaid. So could you just describe the Medicaid environment in Oregon, which is or Oregon. I know you have to pronounce it a certain way there out there. That I think it's sort of unique.
Yeah, you know, I think you're talking about the current we'll call the CCO model, the Coordinated Care Organization model. Former Governor John Kitzhaber had just a vision of how to organize healthcare, and the fact that he was an ER physician, you know, and in the governor's office for multiple terms, he actually gave advice to the governor I worked for in Oklahoma back in 95 when we were starting our program when he was a state senator. And in the Oregon plan, the Oregon Health Authority has divided up the state into roughly county-based, sometimes multiple counties, depending on sort of patterns of care and where people are, to say, let's base the model of providing care for Medicaid folks on the community assets, right? So what are the hospital assets? What are the physician assets? What are the community benefit assets? What are the universities? What are the schools? And in creating those entities, the coordinated care organizations, set requirements for board governance on those entities. So they have to have consumers. There have to be two consumers on the boards of these entities. There have to be physicians, practicing physicians on the boards of these entities. There have to be, you know, dentists. I mean, so what we said was we are going to be deliberate about saying the priority setting and the strategic vision of apportioning healthcare in a community is decided by the community in partnership. It's not about determining how much property to make at the end of the year and then changing prices to fit that. It's about defining the community health needs assessment and the community health improvement plans and bringing that all together for public conversations about what those priorities are. And that's a model that I think is right where Medicaid needs to be. It's where a lot of healthcare needs to be, frankly, in my mind. But it has its challenges, obviously. But I think for Oregon, it's a grand experiment that's now in its second waiver phase, second set of contracts. We're planning for the third to say, how do we continue to build on it, enhance those things that are working, fix those things that aren't, but really go above and beyond to say, let's make sure that equity is not a buzzword in your contracts, but it's a key component of how you go about the work. Let's make sure that as we go about the work, that we're looking at social determinants of health, not just as a checkbox item, but as a true way to identify and measure outcomes for individuals and communities as a whole. And so those are the kind of things that have really sort of invigorated, I think, our communities and have a lot of folks saying, you know, this is a model we can get behind. It is different. It sometimes seems more expensive. It sometimes seems more difficult to measure, which we all know when we come to governments and budgets, measurement and accountability is everything, right? So how do you get beyond those, you know, numbers for this year or this budget cycle and say, let's think about the long-term impacts? An old TV commercial, you say, you can pay me now or pay me later, right? So we'd rather pay now and head off those costs later. And so I think that's what's really exciting about Oregon. And we've got our challenges in trying to make it work. The pressures of the system are the same as anywhere else. You know, pharmacy costs are high. You know, hospitals need to be paid. Workers need to be paid. You know, DME and home health vendors. And, there are pressures in the system that exist like everywhere else. So how do you moderate those and make them fit into a plan that's not designed to look at the bottom line dollar on every occasion? So it gets creative and it's exciting and it's a great place to be.
I just have one follow-up clarifying question. So just these community care organizations, do these pertain only to the state's Medicaid population, or is Medicaid just have us, you know, one seat at the table, and it's supposed to bring together, you know, people with other sorts of coverage? Or are the community care organizations and this idea of dividing up the state really specific to Medicaid?
You know, that's actually a brilliant question. And if you ask Governor Kitzhaber, I believe he would say, and I've talked to him about this many times, is that the original vision was that the CCO commitment was meant to be a starting point, not the end point for these conversations. So we were going to start with where the state had control over defining Medicaid spend, about working with communities. And the thought was that that example would say, hey, at some point we can bring in the education employees buying power and the school system buying power and the exchange possibly, and maybe someday commercial. And so these organizations would at some point encompass the entirety of the healthcare system, making community-based decisions, because we still, like everywhere else, is the way it's designed now. All the good work we do in trying to keep to our 3.4% cost increases every year, we've still got sort of Medicare spend happening like it happens. We've still got commercial spend happening like it's happening. We've still got sort of the employee, public employees systems working like they are. And so, you know, hospitals might get a little cut here, but they'll raise prices here. Physicians might get, you know, and so you've got those things that are still bouncing off. So we're squeezing the balloon. The original intent was that it would be so successful and so popular that there'd be a groundswell to have sort of this organization that way. And that has not proven to have come to fruition. I don't think people have given up on that idea, but it's obviously more difficult and politically treacherous than the grand vision at the beginning had expected it to be.
So this is a pretty obvious question, but with open enrollment period quickly approaching, can you share how CARE Oregon is preparing or has prepared for those interested?
Well, for Medicare open enrollment, I think you're referencing that in Medicaid, it's sort of rolling for us. For Medicare open enrollment, we have a duals plan at CARE Oregon. So we've got our entire suite of I guess, companies at this point is predominantly Medicaid. We have about 500,000 Oregonians that we have responsibility for in the Medicaid space across our state in three different coordinated care organizations, the Portland Metro, Southern Oregon, and on the coast. We've also got a contract with the 9 federally recognized tribes, the state and the federal government, to provide care management for tribal members in Oregon across the state. We have a company that does in-home primary care, palliative care, and hospice. And then finally, we've got Medicare, our Medicare Advantage duals plan. So folks that have Medicaid and Medicare, the largest duals plan in Oregon. And open enrollment is beginning for that program. And we're just thrilled because even as a program that only serves dual members, we've just been informed that we're now 4 stars, which if you know the Medicare stars program is very difficult to get when you're only doing duals. And our team has worked exceptionally hard to get there. So we're working hard to keep that. And part of that has just been how we sort of rethink the entire company to be more member facing, to be more responsive, getting more creative with benefits and working with partners. And so, yeah, we are ramped up for our open enrollment. We're excited to see what we can add to the portfolio, add new members. We've got some creative new benefits for Medicare beneficiaries. And, and in a world where you're competing with, you know, big national 5-star plans that are purely MA, it's a little more difficult. But for the people that we serve, we're proud of the work we can do for them.
And I actually had kind of one general or very ballpark kind of question, but where have you seen managed care go on your experience working in this field over time?
Man, I think that I have this discussion with some of my clinical folks regularly, is managed care is now at a point where I think we're, maybe I'm just old school, but a bit of a dilemma on who does what in the system, right? I think in 96, 97, We partnered with providers, particularly in primary care, but we did a lot of the heavy lift on care management and on really chronic patients at the insurance company side, right? We coordinated the care. We worked with the specialists. We brought things together and managed their care. And over time, we've looked to incorporate the primary care physicians primarily more into total patient care, giving them more insight into what, you know, their patients are dealing with, understanding if their health needs assessments that we've done on them, getting them information on that, letting them manage, in some places, even taking some risk for things beyond primary care, you know, utilization of the emergency systems and those kind of things. So I think there's a strong desire to let primary care providers be those health homes we've talked about, but then how do insurance companies back off? Because at the end of the day, we're ultimately responsible, particularly in Medicaid. The state looks to Care Oregon to make sure these things happen for people. And I can't say, well, I contracted with so-and-so to do it. That's not how it works. So how do you manage that handoff so that it's almost a trust but verify? How do we support the providers, providing technical assistance and data aggregation and assistance so that they can do more for their patients, understanding what's going on, and then helping them instead of doing it ourselves? And I think that's one of the challenges, I think, that will really allow us to truly do value-based payment methodologies. You know, because that's what everybody says they want. They want risk at the provider level. Providers want to be able to do more, but you have to have a way to measure it and make sure that the care is happening. That's the bottom line. It can't be about a payment scheme. It's got to be about a care mechanism. And I think that's where folks are getting more and more creative. And we at Care Oregon spend a lot of our time and effort engaging our provider network, because our network is primarily safety net providers. FQHCs and community behavioral health companies to say, look, let's get you up to speed on technology. Let's get you an EHR. Let's get you understanding data feeds. Let's work with you on how to track this or measure that, and so that they can take on more responsibility and have more sense of what's happening with their patients. And so I think that's the real challenge. A lot of companies want to either say they're going to do it themselves or just throw money over the wall to the provider and say, hey, it's on you. Make it work. And I think that's irresponsible. So that's, I think, the greatest challenge right now in managed care.
I wanted to ask a follow-up question on that and maybe just unpack that a little bit. So I agree with you that sort of back in the day, managed care, you know, it was sort of disease management and the idea that the insurer was sort of in there, deciding, you know, on which procedure or which drug to prescribe, and with risk shifting to providers, I think that, you know, sort of behind that is the notion that you're going to leave sort of the clinical issues to the clinicians. So what are you folks doing if not managing care?
great question. What we're doing is we're coordinating care. So that's why we're a coordinated care organization, not a managed care organization. So what we say is there are a multitude of pieces that go into someone's healthcare. There's the individual conversations they have with their primary care doc about whatever diagnosis or particular issue they've got. There's then social determinants of health, understanding their social needs, their economic needs, their family status. There's the community side, you know, environmental factors on where someone lives impacts how healthy they are. There's tying them to community organizations outside of direct care from primary care. There's aggregating data to let the primary care doctor know what's really going on. It's providing technical assistance and training and education throughout the system to doctors, other providers, to the members. So I think there's still plenty of work for a coordinated care organization to do, to wrap around the entire system and to say, you know, here are the examples of what's working and what's not. We've just recently created a program we had done for large primary care sites a few years ago called our Primary Care Investment Fund, where our board dedicated $20 million for us to engage large primary care sites with forgivable loans of up to $5 million to help them transform their practices, whether it was physical buildings for capacity and access, training education for staff, hiring bonuses, technology, but they had to engage us in metrics and goal setting and have sort of direct impact on the communities. And we're now going to do something like that for some of our behavioral health providers to bring them up to speed and let them be able to compete in this market. But so I think that's the role that a coordinated care organization can play, that it's not our job to get between a member and their provider, but we need to allow both parties to have all the information they need to make sound decisions, understand what's working, what's not. And that's our role.
I guess we should consider changing our name to coordinated healthcare executive, but that might be a little bit clumsy and I don't know whether we can make it fit.
Maybe, and I'm not sure that you'll have all of my compatriots agreeing that that's where it needs to go. When you are underwriting, when you have stock prices to watch and dividends to pay, every dollar counts. And in our model, we can have ebbs and flows. I'm not worried about this year's net income or margin for this year. I'm thinking about the long term. Everyone doesn't have that luxury. So I think that's another advantage to sort of our model and us as a not-for-profit is that, you know, we can sort of move with the wind a little bit better and take some hits, make some investments that others might not be able to do because they've got other accountabilities. But we're excited for what we do and how we do it, and we want to keep doing more of it.
I want to ask a clarifying. When you say you're our model, and I think you said it, but you're referring to your nonprofit status there, that you, unlike, say, a Centene and some of the publicly traded companies, which, you know, have to report quarterly earnings. So there's pressure on the here and now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think other models is less for-profit versus not-for-profit. I mean, there's some not-for-profits that have sort of crazy buildings and planes and all that. But I think our model is more about how we engage our providers in the communities. So it's about a community-based model as opposed to our own sort of P&L. So there are a lot of for-profit companies do amazing work that engage communities and go sort of out of their way to enhance the systems. So I think it's, for me, when I refer to our model, more about how you engage communities and providers and community benefit organizations more so than just profit and loss.
Eric, you've worn many hats and you referenced sort of your, that you've had sort of almost a smorgasbord type career of some of this, some of that.
Right.
And it sort of culminated in this CEO role. So what's it like for you having that CEO title and being the boss?
Well, I think that, so I've had the title before. I don't know that I necessarily considered myself the boss before. Even my Shower Anderson days in Oklahoma, back when Oklahoma had Medicaid managed care before they did away with it. Because I helped start it. And so it was good to be in a plan there. I was CEO of Heartland Health Plan. But Heartland Health Plan was owned by a provider system, right? So a hospital system owned the plan. So even though I was CEO of the plan, I didn't really own the thing. You know, we enter the hospital. Same with Boston Medical Center Health Plan. Great work, great people, owned by a hospital system. Centene, corporate entity in Clayton, Missouri. Value Options, again, a corporate entity in Virginia. So this is the first time where I think the conversations of where the organization goes are between my board of directors and I. And a board of directors that is an amazing, diverse set of individuals who understand big ticket healthcare, understand finance, understand community benefits and FQACs, and bring all that together to have conversations just at a different level, right? Our priority is not about filling beds in a hospital or paying dividends or the 10-8 reports, or it's about serving a population in a way that we otherwise might not be able to. And so I think that's the big difference for me. It's not the title, but it's the organization that's designed around simply what we call the care organ effect. sort of doing the right thing for people, supporting provider networks in our communities, and being a good partner. And I think that's been different. I think there's more flexibility. Ideas I have, I can sort of just put into play or engage with my board. And so a lot of those barriers are gone. And I've got a really creative team that is looking for ways to do things that I can say in some of my other positions, those ideas would have been squashed by sort of a corporate decision or a budgeting decision, where now we can say, let's give it a shot. You know, let's try to see what works.
Sounds like there's more freedom to innovate.
There is. And, you know, like I said, a lot of the for-profits, they have the bandwidth and the resources to innovate and get creative, particularly technically. But sometimes, you know, if those things don't show promise immediately, you know, they'll shift gears. You know, we can invest a little longer in some things, let them flow a little better. So I think it's a combination. You know, we'll take advantage of what they learn technically from their resources, hopefully to incorporate, and hopefully they'll take some things that we learn from our engagement of communities into what they do and in their business. And that helps everyone.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.